And good evening and welcome to WIPR's special coverage of Primary Night 2014. I'm Tom Hall here in Studio A with WIPR's senior news analyst and columnist for the Daily Record, Fraser Smith. Fraser, how you doing?
Good, Tom.
Good to be here and good to have you here. We're joined tonight by two political analysts who will help us unpack today's elections and suggest where we're headed in the general elections that take place 132 days from tonight. Don Wargs is a political scientist at Towson University. Welcome, Don. Good to see you.
It's great to be here.
And Richard Cross writes a blog called Cross Purposes, also contributes to the op-ed page of the Baltimore Sun. He was a speechwriter for Bob Ehrlich when he was a governor of Maryland, and he joins us as well. Good to see you, Richard.
Great to be here.
So tonight we'll look at the results of various races as they come in, and we'll have analysis by our panel and conversation with you. The lines are open. Call us at 866-661-9309. That's toll free, 866-661-9309. Did you vote today? Did you decide not to vote? Well, either way, what's behind your decision? What are the issues and who are the candidates that got you interested? Or if you never got interested in today's primary, why not? Again, give us a call toll free at 866-661-9309. 661-9309, 866-661-9309. You can also email us at newsroom@wipr.org. You can put a message on our Facebook page, or you can tweet us at WIPR881FM. So, Fraser, the narrative all day has been the low turnout. We had the highest turnout ever with a couple of extra days of early voting in the 8 days of early voting. But the turnout apparently tonight is going to be pretty low. The we can report now that the Associated Press, the Washington Post, and the Baltimore Sun have declared that Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown and Howard County Executive Ken Ullman have won the Democratic primary for governor. They've got about 26%, 32% of the vote counted so far, and they've got well over 50%. Any surprise there?
None at all. I think the only vote that matters, as the politicians like to say, is tracking with the polling that's been done throughout the campaign. The only excitement actually throughout this campaign has been the person who's going to finish second or third with Heather Mazier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people have said, and I have said, that she's run the best campaign. But I think that's true. At the same time, I think you have to remember that in the very beginning of this race, you had some really smart moves that were made by Brown. And the smartest one was taking Ken Ullman, the county executive in Howard, as his running mate.
Because he was a prospective opponent.
He was
in
the race.
Yeah.
He was in the race. And a lot of people who'd seen all of these, a lot of inside people who'd seen all these said, you know, he's the sharpest. He is the most administratively prepared to do this job. But he realized what the polls have shown and what the voters are saying today, and that is that, like it or not, greater than 30% of the Democratic primary vote is black. And history was a player in this race. People wanted to see Anthony Brown become the first African-American or black governor in the state.
Mm-hmm. Don Wargs, what's your take on that?
I think that, surprisingly, Brown didn't really push that as much as I would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, yeah, history seems to be there, but it was very much downplayed, which I think may also play a role in the low turnout. I mean, I don't think people really were excited about the race at all.
Do you think that that was a particular political strategy by the lieutenant governor to purposely downplay?
Yes. Yeah. I'm sure. I'm sure that was something they had to have thought about because, blacks would make up a large chunk of the vote, but it's not a majority, right? And he's not. I don't think he's ever come across as that kind of a rah-rah candidate. He seems to be running more of a managerial, we're going to keep doing what we're doing. It's not so much transformative as we're going to keep doing the good things that we've been doing. So I'm sure that was on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of moderate, right? Not really radical.
And Richard Cross, what about Fraser's observation that Heather Mazier ran the best campaign?
Oh, I would have to agree with that. Heather Mazur ran a campaign that was very kind of low on dollars, but very focused on issue voters who will vote under any circumstances in primaries. She targeted marijuana legalization. She targeted the living wage. She focused on these issues, and she leveraged Facebook and social media expertly. So she really she knew who her audience was. You can see that in the debate. She would talk to these very targeted issues to people who she know would get up and vote during early voting or today. And she basically took the best shot she had given the resources limitations that she had.
So, Frazier, Lieutenant Governor Brown ran what folks refer to as a Rose Garden campaign from the very beginning. He was out front from the very start, had a ton of endorsements, had all the money or most of the money, and sort of acted like he had this thing wrapped up, you know, back in January. Evidently, it worked, you know, but what
he
kind
had
of
polling early on that showed pretty much what the public polls have shown from the very beginning. So they knew what they were doing. And I think it was a masterstroke to get Ullman, because Ullman would have been, you know, there was a point during the campaign when Mr. Brown and Mr. Gansler were not creating any interest. And some people were saying, well, gee, Ken Ullman, what a bad choice he made. But basically, I talked to some of those guys, and they said, no, he's into this. This is the way he knew it would go. And what he knew was that the votes were there, and that was not going to change.
So he just sort of, you know, he was sticking with what was working and wasn't going to change. Is that going to catch up with him in a general election?
Catch up with Brown?
With Brown. I mean, is Brown going to be able to exert that same kind of strategy in a general election against a Republican opponent whom we don't know?
Well, I think his strategy in the primary will help him in the general. I mean, he didn't have to do anything that was so, you know, race-driven that it would turn a lot of people off in the general. He didn't have to do that, and perhaps this was some of the thinking. You would think it was.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. Jay is calling from Baltimore. Jay, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. You know, I spoke to a lot of delegates, and I spoke to a lot of candidates, and, you know, what I've noticed, and I mean, it is politics, but I feel like the people are not addressing the root cause. They're not. I mean, we have critical issues that need to be resolved, and I think Maryland is kind of in a. We've had big issues, and if we all remember, Maryland was just rated 49th in terms of growth in 2013. This is not where we want to be, and I just feel like the politicians, and I'm not talking about everybody. I'm not going to highlight anybody in particular, but a lot of the delegates that I saw out there that were rooting and trying to get you to vote for them didn't address, and we're not addressing, and they don't even understand, you know, a strategic plan to move forward to get us out of the situation we're in. I mean, there are systemic issues in the state. We're losing companies. We're losing tax base. We should not be. The demographics in the United States show that this should be a heyday for the state of Maryland and for the country, and I feel like we're kind of not addressing the root cause of fundamental structural issues. We keep on talking about education. We keep talking about, you know, infrastructure. You know, those are the end result of bad long-term strategic planning. So the fact that we don't have a tax base for the roads is because we haven't determined what the strategic plan is to define what success is. If you ask these people, if you ask the individual delegates, their idea of defining success is completely at odds with what most economics professors or economics people would define success. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I just...
Don Works, I mean, what do you think about that in terms of the governor's race? I mean, a lieutenant governor has this voluminous position papers published on his website. Mm-hmm. Did he articulate a vision, you know, a grand vision for the state?
I think that's a really good question. And the caller, I think, makes some really, really interesting and important points, right? So just I want to say something about that and then come back to the lieutenant governor. Most of the folks who are running for the legislature are not necessarily grand visionaries, right? And the way you win a seat in the legislature is not by having a grand vision. It's by, you know, constituent services, or, you know, I'm going to bring this little project to you guys. I'm going to get the street paved. I'm going to get your lights, you know, turned on, and those kinds of things. And so, I mean, the process kind of produces folks who don't do what the caller seems to want folks, you know, the political leadership to do. Now, the executive, though, you know, the governor, you kind of hope or people expect that person to have a grand vision. And I think Brown has these elaborate position papers, and they seem, you know, detailed. And he had a really strong advantage because, having been in government, you know, have been governing, they sort of know what all the issues are, the existing policies, so he can say, hey, we're going to continue to do this, or we'll tweak that, whereas the folks coming from outside, you know, have to be a lot more vague, you know. So I think that may really work with people who know about a particular policy area, because he kind of can talk that talk, and so that could be effective. So I thought that I was really struck by what the caller was saying, because that is one of the difficulties of the political process, right? We don't get that.
On 88.1, you're listening to special primary night coverage here on WYPR. We're going to go down to one of the folks that we have from the WYPR news department out in the field. Nikki Gamer is at Heather Mazur's campaign headquarters at the Maryland Historical Society here in Baltimore. Nikki, how you doing, and what's the mood down there?
Great, Tom. The mood is, I have to say, it's energized. Heather just concluded her speech, and I've talked to several supporters since the speech. And, you know, it's not, people are optimistic, and it kept being repeated that the progressive agenda is square in the public realm now, and people seem to be energized by that and Heather's message, you know. So I can't say it's a sad time here. People are just standing around, they're chatting, and they seem to be looking forward.
What do folks speculate as to what Heather Mazur's next move is? She has stated in the last few weeks that if this race doesn't work out, she's going to get out of politics. Do you think she's going to stick to her word on that one?
You know, I didn't get a sense of that from the speech itself. She was really just pushing the ideas that she brought to this campaign. You know, of course, legalizing marijuana was a very progressive idea here in Maryland. And, you know, she didn't really give a clear indication of where she's headed. But, you know, she's got support here in this state from this crowd. I can tell that people are really moved by her.
Nikki Gamer reporting from Heather Mazur's campaign headquarters here in Baltimore. Richard Cross, the progressive agenda and Heather Mazur, has she put things on the map that otherwise wouldn't have been put on? And has she moved Lieutenant Governor Brown and Mr. Gansler, for that matter, to the left in any significant way? And if so, is that going to affect things for the Lieutenant Governor and Mr. Ullman in the general election?
Well, I can't see where the Lieutenant Governor's positions drifted to the left as a result of what Heather Mazur said during the campaign. There was an interesting incident in which Attorney General Gansler criticized her for not graduating from college, and Lieutenant Governor kind of swept in and defended her. What I think she gains out of this campaign is, I think she comes out of it with options. If she chooses to stay in the political arena, I think she has a constituency statewide. She's on the map of a lot of people who didn't know she was there, and her supporters are very much backing her on issues as well as backing her as a candidate. So I think she has a lot of options, and I think you're going to see her maybe in a future administration, or maybe she'll run for statewide office, because she would enter a statewide office race with this hardcore constituency of activists.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Frazier and I will be right back with our guests. We'll update the results that we have so far, and we'll have more analysis from Don Wargs and Richard Cross. Now, again, if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call. The number is 866-661-9309. You're listening to WYPR's special live coverage of Primary Night 2014. Stay with us. And welcome back. I'm Tom Hall here in Studio A with Frazier Smith and our guest Don Wargs of Towson University and Richard Cross, who blogs and writes op-eds for the Baltimore Sun. We're talking about the primary election results this evening. We've got a little late word here, some word about the the Republican governor's race. That's fairly close at this point, with about 40% of the vote counted. Larry Hogan and Boyd Rutherford ahead by about 10 points over David Craig and Jeannie Hadaway. Fraser Smith, this was not expected to be particularly close, but
know if it's close or not, because you don't know where these votes are coming from.
Right.
So the numbers are interesting for us because that's what we have at the moment, but we don't know how close it'll be. Earlier, you were asking how we thought the general election race was shaping up, and I think it's possible that it could be a little bit more interesting than what we've recently seen. Mm-hmm. Although that wouldn't be difficult.
Yeah, right. But, setting the bar pretty low.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I don't think Anthony Brown is well tested. I mean, I think the primary was good for him because I think he will get challenged in the general. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that the caller was talking about will definitely be on the mind of the Republican nominee, whoever that turns out to be.
And, of course, we don't know who that Republican nominee is going to be. But if it's Mr. Hogan, Mr. Craig, Richard Cross, a lot of Republicans voting in this primary are making their decision based on who they think has the best chance against who they assumed was going to be the winner of the Democrat primary. And they were right if they were guessing Anthony Brown. So do you think David Craig or Mr. Hogan have a better chance, a worse chance of beating Lieutenant Governor Brown in a general election?
I think each of them is an underdog. I think Larry Hogan's advantage in the primary was that I think he hit the sweet spot in terms of the message. I think he came out as the resident critic of everything O'Malley, and he hammered that point before the election, you know, during as a candidate, and he kind of got it out there. I think David Craig ran a gentleman's campaign, which it was difficult to find his message, and then he tried to kind of target, I guess, nugget issues that would appeal to right-wing Republican voters. He was talking about concealed carry. He was talking about repealing the state income tax. And none of those, I don't think people really saw any of those ideas or thought they liked them as viable, whereas Larry Hogan just kind of hit the obvious message, go after O'Malley, go after O'Malley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking that as well. I was watching one of the commercials that Hogan had. I mean, it's clear he's running against, you know, O'Malley and Brown, right? And I think that's the right strategy, even in the primary, because you get people thinking, maybe he's a good alternative to them. And also to really to make it really a referendum on, are you happy with the O'Malley administration? If you are, then you'll vote for Brown. If you're not, then, you know, here's an alternative. So I think it can be interesting.
Well, phone number to call is 866-661-9309 to get in on the conversation about today's primary election. Did you vote? Who'd you vote for, if you care to share that? If you didn't vote, how come? Why did you decide to sit this one out, as evidently a bunch of people did? Again, the number 866-661-9309 for WYPR's live special coverage of primary night 2014. So, Fraser, picking up on the point that Don was making, what do you think?
Well, I think you have to look at the primary, at least in the Democratic Party, as being somewhat of a referendum on the last mm-hmm. 8 years of Governor O'Malley. And it's going to be the numbers seem to be pretty close to what the polling showed, which is at least a 2-1 victory for him. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty good news if you're O'Malley and Brown, I would think. It suggests that, at least on the Democratic side, which you would expect, there's not a lot of unhappiness about what went on there.
Do you think that that's a contributing factor to what everybody perceives as a very low turnout? And again, we don't know what the numbers are yet, but is low turnout perhaps animated at all by the fact that people say, you know, things are going okay, we're doing fine, no reason to get involved?
I would think that's a factor.
Yeah. I think it's a factor, but I don't think that that's the full explanation. And I'm not sure what explains it. I mean, there's just not a lot of excitement around the race, any of these races, right? So I was just thinking, my wife and I were discussing after we each voted, like, who'd you vote for? Who'd you vote for? And we voted for a lot of different people, which is kind of funny because we always vote for the same people. But it was like there were a number of races where we didn't even, you know, we hadn't. There was nobody that stuck out to us. So it was like, you voted for him? Well, I voted for her. Oh, well. You know, so I think there was and that comes back to when you aggregate that across the state, I think that there are a lot of folks who were that weren't motivated, you know, and I think that's more of a, that's a reflection on something. I don't think it's just satisfaction with O'Malley and Brown, and I don't think it's just apathy. I think there's, it may be a sense of almost the irrelevance of who you vote for.
Mm-hmm. You know, Richard, some folks suggest that there's extreme dissatisfaction with Congress, mm-hmm. And the dysfunction in Congress, and that they paint everybody else at every other level of government with that same broad brush, even though the argument can be made that at the local level, local and state level, the decisions being made by those politicians affect one's daily life, you know, in a pretty significant way. Do you think that's playing into this at all?
I don't think it was any more of the Congress was any more of a factor in these elections than the president's approval or disapproval were a factor. And I have a lot of Republican friends are going to be angry at me for saying this, but I think the real architect of Anthony Brown's victory was Martin O'Malley. And if you look at the last two Democratic two-term governors, William Donald Schaefer and Paris Clendenning, they both left office in the 30s. They were both an albatross on the necks mm-hmm. of their lieutenant governors. Gonzalez polled O'Malley towards the end of last year. He came in at 48%. A couple months later, the Post polled, he was at 55% approval. He's not the albatross around Anthony Brown's neck, as was the case with previous governors and previous lieutenant governors.
On 88.1, you're listening to live primary night coverage here in Studio A. I'm Tom Hall, along with Fraser Smith. Don Wargs from Towson University is here. Richard Cross, who blogs at a blog called Cross Purposes and writes op-eds for The Sun, is also here. The number to call to get in on the conversation, 866-661-9309. That's 866-661-9309. Let's talk about, Fraser, the suggestion that the primary should be open. When we talk about low voter turnout, we're talking about Democrats going to their corner, Republicans going to their corner. A lot of movement, a lot of, it seems to me, folks gaining support for the idea of open primaries, which allow people of any party or unaffiliated voters to vote in any primary.
Well, I think it's probably something that needs to be studied. I hate to say that, but, you know, I think you need to look at states where that is the case. In Virginia, you could do that. And I think some people, I guess we don't know the real numbers yet, but some people did change their registration so that they could vote against the minority leader, Mr. Cantor. Mm-hmm. So I think something needs to be done, obviously, in the states where this kind of lack of interest in the process is so obvious and so clear. I think a lot of people feel like they're left out, that they're not being paid attention to. That's probably, that's mostly what happened to Eric Cantor. I mean, this guy was playing a Washington game and barely paying any attention to the people back home. And some very low number of people booted one of the most important men in the Congress of the United States. Yeah. I think voters do have power if they will use it.
Yeah. And of course, I'm fascinated by the efficacy of the polling that they did. Cantor's internal poll said he was ahead by 40% the day of the election. It seems like his campaign manager may need to be sued for, you know, malpractice. We want to move now to Gwendolyn Glenn. She's at Doug Gansler's headquarters in Bethesda. She's at the North Bethesda Marriott. Gwendolyn Glenn, what's the mood down there at Gansler headquarters?
Well, I would say it's all night. It's been pretty subdued because as the results were starting to come in, many of his supporters said that they were very disappointed that the numbers were not higher. I talked with Delegate Jalene Ivey, and she said that she thought that a lot of the negativity in the campaign distracted from real issues. And also in Gansler's concession speech, he also made reference to that, but he said he's a fighter and that he plans to continue pushing for many of the issues that he talked about in the campaign and that the Democrats will come together after this is all over.
So he has made a concession speech at this point?
Yes, he has. He made a concession speech, and again, it was a somber mood, but the supporters came to the front and they cheered him on. And he talked about a lot of the things he talked about during the campaign, expanding pre-K and education and things that he wants to do in terms of doing things for the middle class. And he said that he feels that Maryland voters are frustrated and that he plans to continue pushing issues that he heard on the campaign trail that people are concerned about.
Gwendolyn Glenn reporting from the North Bethesda Marriott with the Doug Gansler campaign. Thanks, Gwendolyn. We'll see you soon. I want to go to the phones now. Nemo is calling from Baltimore. Nemo, I understand that you decided not to vote today. How come?
Well, I mean, I don't vote for example, the president, especially I wouldn't even vote for, any local, governors, mayors, anything. Because, I mean, if you look at the previous history in Baltimore, I mean, didn't one mayor get in trouble for, buying fur coats? And then they think Governor O'Malley was on The Wire. Well, they basically made a whole, a season or two about, the governor, how he made his way up to the top. And, I mean, isn't his wife, for example, a judge?
She's a judge. Now, Nemo, what would restore your faith in government? Obviously, you don't have much reason to believe that anybody at various levels of government can do anything to help you.
Well, I mean, a lot of the times they get paid certain things on the side to follow a certain agenda, and that's basically one of the reasons why I won't, because I don't trust.
So can you give me a scenario in which your faith might be increased in the power of government?
When you see the roads and how much money Baltimore, for example, makes on the tolls, okay? Then you see all the potholes in the roads. And then you see Obama saying, oh, yeah, we're going to fix, the roads. And then 3 months later, oh, no, now we're not going to. We're going to. So, I mean, it's just to me, it's a joke. And they joke around about it. They come up with these Ponzi schemes, how to make all this certain amount of money, and it's just ridiculous. It's a big joke.
All right. Well, Nemo, thanks for your call. Appreciate your being part of the conversation. So, Frazier, what's your take on Doug Gansler's next move at this point?
I have no idea what he has in mind. I think this is where he's been pointing himself for who knows how many years. Clearly, I think a lot of what happened to him in this race were self-inflicted wounds, but they resonated against the image that a lot of people have of him as being a little bit too flashy, a little bit too eager to grab the headlines and the spotlight. He managed to do that in the worst possible way in this campaign. With the beach party and the orders to the state police. I mean, people don't like it when you're throwing your weight around, and when you start out that way, you can't overcome it. You probably can't ever overcome it. So, yeah. Maybe he'll be a good tough lawyer. He would be, I think.
On 88.1, you're listening to special live primary coverage here, Primary Night 2014. I'm Tom Hall in the studio with Frazier Smith. Don Wargs from Towson University and Richard Cross from Cross Purposes Blog are here as well. Let me update you on where we stand so far. The AP has declared that Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown and Ken Ullman have won the Democrat primary for governor. We also now have concession in the race for Attorney General. Brian Frosch has been declared the winner by the Associated Press in the race for Attorney General. John Cardin has conceded in that race. So that's an interesting race, and that turned around, Don Wargs, pretty late in the game, didn't it?
Yes, it did. That was a race where you saw that the momentum just really built, in the last, few weeks. It was a surprise, the shift, but not really a surprise that the outcome. I think that, Cardin benefited from name recognition initially, and then, but he also was sort of hit with, this image of not working, misusing, state resources. But then, with all the in the endorsements, all those things I think really mattered because the folks who are doing the endorsing have networks of folks who come out to vote, right? And so it's not just, what you get in the opinion polls. It's who you can turn out to vote. And I think that that's probably what that outcome really reflects.
And Richard Cross, what do you think? Was that a surprise? Ultimately, here's the guy, Brian Frosch, who from the very beginning had most of the endorsements, had most of the money, had most of the name recognition, other than the fact that his last name wasn't Cardin. But certainly people who follow politics know of his work in the Assembly. And then all of a sudden, Cardin just became this magic name because he's the nephew of Ben Cardin. And it was a real hustle to get back to break even, and then eventually he's apparently won the race.
Well, two things. I think the younger Cardin is something of a political stumble bomb. We saw that with the incident with the engagement, the Baltimore police getting involved. Mm-hmm. We saw that with the 75% vote missing stat that came out. And I think at that point, he really had his name to coast on. Meanwhile, you had the governor decide to get behind it at a very strategic time behind the Frosch campaign. And I have to think that the resources that the governors and the establishment brought to Senator Frosch were decisive in the end, given the fact that Cardin was imploding at the same time.
Mm-hmm. With about 42% of the vote counted so far in the Republican race for governor, Larry Hogan and Boyd Rutherford ahead with about 42% of the vote, David Craig and Jeannie Hadaway at about 31% of the vote. So that one stays at about 10 points apart again. It hasn't moved too much since we last talked, but we're going to obviously keep an eye on that one to see who will be the opponents of Mr. Brown and Mr. Ullman. Does a low turnout, Frazier, favor a particular campaign strategy? And in this particular instance, with things like the attorney general race, which was seen to be pretty close, with things like the governor's race, which never seemed to be particularly close on the Democrat side, does it favor one kind of candidate over another?
It probably depends on, it's something that matters race by race. You have to evaluate it race by race. I mean, I think that Frosch was way behind in the beginning based on name recognition, which is one of the staples of mm-hmm. running for office whenever and wherever you do it. People know who you are, and they think they know who you are, then they're more likely to vote for you. If they don't, then they're not going to. Well, Frosch had a lot of money, had all the endorsements, and never forget the fact that most people are not like us. Mm-hmm. They're not thinking about this every hour of the day. Mm-hmm. So they're making up their minds in the last couple weeks. And this is what I think happened. People started to pay attention, and they saw the overwhelming superiority of Brian Frosch as a candidate. And they this was happening, in that critical period. And so Frosch's campaign was really peaking at just the right time. So I think, but also I think that a low, if you had a heavy turnout, it would suggest that one of the candidates was either well known or that there was some issue that was driving people mm-hmm. to the polls. But here it was mobilizing your strengths and getting people to understand the superiority that you brought to the table. And it happened just at the right time for him.
On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. That's Frazier Smith. We're talking about today's primary election results here in Maryland. Our phone number to get involved, 866-661-9309. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back. And welcome back, everybody. I'm Tom Hall, along with Frazier Smith and our guests, Don Wargs and Richard Cross. We're talking about today's primary election results. We're going to go down to Kenny Burns. He is at John Cardin's headquarters here in Baltimore. They're down in Harbor East at Roy's Restaurant. Kenny, what's the mood down there with the folks at John Cardin's headquarters?
Tom, the mood is somewhat festive, but really not everybody's happy. John Cardin conceded within the last 5 to 10 minutes. At the same time, I believe Senator Frosch has claimed victory in this race.
And is there a sense of shock down there? I mean, they were ahead for so long. They had this great name recognition, being the nephew of Ben Cardin. Are folks still kind of in a state of disbelief? I mean, for an awful lot of this race, they thought that they had it wrapped up.
There is a little bit of shock as far as what everyone was expecting the final result to be. And as you mentioned, he did have the lead for a little while, but it was also tight going to the last couple of weeks. The Washington Post had the latest poll that had literally a statistical dead heat going into this race.
All right, Ken Burns reporting from John Cardin's headquarters in downtown Baltimore. Thanks, Kenny. We'll see you soon. And again, if you'd like to be part of our conversation, the number here is 866-661-9309. What do you think of the results in the Attorney General's race? What do you think of the results in the Democrat race for governor with Mr. Brown, Mr. Ullman winning? 866-661-9309. Also want to update you on a race here in Baltimore City, which is pretty close with 56% of the vote counted in the state's attorney race on the Democrat side. Current state's attorney Greg Bernstein has 46% of the vote and his challenger Marilyn Mosby at 54% of the vote. Wow. That's with 56% of the vote count, a little bit more than half. So Marilyn Mosby, a strong contender in that race for Baltimore state's attorney. Don, anything that strikes you about that result so far?
Yeah, it's surprising. But again, the sentiment that you know that I was hearing and talking to different folks is that, you know, she was surging and she was, had momentum, and there was energy behind her her campaign. But that's a surprise, you know, for an incumbent, you know. It's not the race isn't over yet, but it's a surprise.
Yeah. Any other surprises in general about this campaign overall, Richard Cross? I mean, as you've seen the campaign develop, you worked in the Ehrlich administration, you know, you've been on the ground with these things. Did stuff strike you as being unusual in any way?
Well, I think the thing that surprised me the most is Doug Ganser got into the race with $5 million in the bank, and it just never really came together for him. It really kind of, he really kind of tripped out of the gate, and never really recovered. That's really the only surprise, I think, kind of the results. And I've talked to some of my Democratic friends, you know, over lunch. We were kind of speculating, and everything I think we kind of thought would happen is kind of aligned tonight. And there aren't really any real electoral surprises. It was just the unsatisfied potential of Doug Gansler. That's the biggest surprise for me.
On 88.1, you're listening to live primary coverage here on WYPR. We're going to send it down now to Annapolis at the Hogan Rutherford headquarters. Karen Hostler is there with Larry Hogan's folks. Karen, how are things going down there in Annapolis?
Well, it looks like they just got some decisive word here. Apparently, David Craig has conceded, and he was, you know, running closest of the challengers, although Larry Hogan has really been ahead from the beginning of the evening. He is, his father now, former congressman, county executive, has taken the stage, and Larry's going to be out in a few minutes. One of the things that really made a difference for them is the numbers came in from the big counties. Baltimore County, he got 49%, Anne Arundel, 48%, Montgomery County, 41%. So this is just with 38% of the state votes counted, but nonetheless, they are convinced that they have victory, and none of the other challengers was even close.
All right, Karen Hostler reporting from Annapolis at Larry Hogan's campaign headquarters, where he has accepted the nomination. David Craig, his closest contender, has acceded that election. We're going to now go to Lieutenant Governor Brown's headquarters. Christopher Connolly is down there. Chris, I would imagine folks are in a pretty good mood in College Park tonight.
It is definitely a party down here. People are very excited. I mean, it seems like every new precinct brought about cheers from the crowd down here. And it's been a big party. Anthony Brown just finished his speech accepting the nomination. And, you know, he sort of went through some of his, you know, some of the stuff we've heard on the campaign trail. Really got the crowd going.
All right, Chris Connolly reporting from the campaign headquarters of Anthony Brown down in College Park at the University of Maryland. Frazier Smith?
I just want to go back to the state's attorney's race in the city. Something that I don't know has ever been measured scientifically, but we always thought that a profile of a black voter in Baltimore was a woman, a black woman, 45 years old, who went to church and would not be absent from the polls. Historically, Victorine Adams, the former member of the city council, had a group called Women Power. It was a very tight organization, and it was based on the idea that if you were involved, you could make things happen, and they have done it over time. This is why Patricia Jessamy was the state's attorney for so long before Bernstein sort of snuck up on her. I mean, this is fair. And I think a lot of people, even the black women voters, thought she'd been there too long. And so it looks as if, and, you know, people were saying this at the time, that Mr. Bernstein would have, you know, would have a four-year sort of intercession. Now, who knows whether the numbers that we're seeing here will hold up.
Right. They have not called that race. Right. So Marilyn Mosby ahead now. Of course, she's a 34-year-old lawyer who used to work for Greg Bernstein. And right. She was a prosecutor in his office. She's now working for an insurance company, I believe. And as you say, Greg Bernstein, his first run for political office 4 years ago. He's been a lawyer for 30 years. But, you know, he's 20-some years older than Marilyn Mosby and considered, you know, more experienced in the workforce and whatnot. But it's possible that Marilyn Mosby is sneaking up on Greg Bernstein the way that Greg Bernstein snuck up on Patricia Jessen.
It's possible. And, I saw some of the Mosby team at the polling place during early voting, and they were younger, and they were really excited about her prospects.
On 88.1, you're listening to live primary coverage here at Primary Night 2014. The number to get involved, 866-661-9309. I'm Tom Hall in the studio with Fraser Smith, Don Wargs, and Richard Cross. Richard, does Lieutenant Governor Brown have to live up to the expectations of the polls before the election? I mean, he won the election. Almost everybody assumed he would. But if he doesn't end up ultimately performing at or above what the polls suggested he would, is that going to be a liability when he meets Mr. Hogan?
No, I just think he has to just meet basic expectations, which I think means not making any major gaffes and hoping there's not an economic issue between now and the election and there's not an issue with a scandal or something happening on the landscape. I think he ran a rather conservative campaign. And I think it's one of the reasons he got elected. And I think that strategy will continue. I think this is a sound strategy for a Democrat running for governor in Maryland.
All right, so this is what we know at this point. Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown and Ken Ullman have been declared the winners in the Democrat primary for governor and lieutenant governor. And they will face in the November election Larry Hogan and his running mate Boyd Rutherford in the November 4th election. Those results both confirmed by the Associated Press. We've also had the election called for Brian Frosch as the Attorney General, who will replace Doug Gansler, who was one of the losers tonight in the Democratic primary for governor. It's interesting to me, Don Wargs, none of the teams, the governor and lieutenant governor teams, mm-hmm. this year were consisted of two white guys, Boyd Rutherford.
It's because they all wanted to win.
And is that the new normal in Maryland politics and perhaps in national politics? Boyd Rutherford, who's Larry Hogan's running mate, an African-American, worked in the Bush administration and in the Ehrlich administration. And, of course, Lieutenant Governor Brown himself, African-American. Is this the new normal?
In Maryland, it's the new normal in Maryland. I mean, remember with Kathleen Kennedy Townsend? I mean, that was probably the last, the ticket you had. I guess Ehrlich's second campaign, but in Maryland, it matters, right? I mean, it's African Americans are a large portion of the voting population, but also. I mean, it's not just about black voters either. It's about sort of an image of inclusion and inclusiveness and progressiveness and so it sends a certain signal. I was looking at the various teams and I was struck by that as well. And yeah, you know, Republican, Democrat, you've got to.
it's about inclusiveness and it's about the numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked in Rhode Island for years, and the tickets were always balanced up there. You had Irish, and you had, as they referred to as Italos, you know, Italians were on it. This was always the case. It's never been otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Inclusiveness is great, but, you know, focus groups and numbers matter as well. Fraser, why do you think that David Craig was not able to prevail in this race? Because on paper, here's a guy who's virtually held every office you can hold. He's very experienced in government. He had a lot of name recognition. People knew who he was, and he had, you know, by all reports, very good support and good track record. But he was never able to get traction in this race. How come?
Well, I think Richard sort of laid it out earlier. I don't think was a particularly attractive candidate. You know, you've got to be on TV, and you have to look like you can win. Mm-hmm. And the party is being pretty much driven by its right wing, and this has been going on for a while. You know, and so the party ends up endorsing, apparently, I guess, well, it has endorsed Larry Hogan. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I will tell you, I think that Hogan has seemed to me like somebody who has potential as a candidate. And I think he's somebody that you can't discount. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably going to run a better than usual race against Larry Hogan. I mean, against
Lieutenant Governor Brown.
Right, exactly. That's what
Richard, you think so?
Yeah, well, if you look at Larry Hogan's message, it's jobs, the economy, and helping the middle class. That's straight out of his ads. I could never figure out during the course of the campaign what David Craig's comparable message was, and I think he suffered for it. Yes, I do think Larry will be a kind of a better candidate than we've seen the last two cycles, because I think he's decent on message, and I think he's kind of the happy warrior of politics, and I think he'll take the battle to Brown and let the chips fall where they may.
Do you think that the Republican voters were conscious of him being a better candidate in the general election?
I think that the message is what they responded to. I think there was the message of he's making the case against O'Malley. Okay. And I think they thought that if you're running against O'Malley's lieutenant governor, mm-hmm. that's the case you have to make.
Cheryl writes in on Facebook, says, if independents had a way to make their voices heard, the races in Maryland would be competitive and potentially different. Well, Frazier, you're thinking that this general election in the gubernatorial race is going to be different. What do you think the main issues are going to be? Because even throughout all of this polling that showed Lieutenant Governor Brown ahead, there was always this X factor of all these undecided voters. Mm-hmm. Where do you think what do you think is going to resonate with them in these next few months before November?
Well, one of the reasons I think that Larry Hogan will do a respectable job versus the lieutenant governor is that it can be a little difficult, I think, to talk about more of the same, even if it's more of a good thing, you know, because where's the drama there? Where's the excitement there? And if you're talking about throwing the bums out, and you know that that's going to resonate with some people, you can probably get some excitement building behind you. Mm-hmm. But again, I mean, I think it'll depend on whether a lot of the people in the state are really unhappy with what has happened over the last 8 years and sort of tired of the idea of a similar 8 years, which it would be.
Mm-hmm. But I think
Works.
I would agree. The only thing I would add is that I do think that the national political climate could matter in terms of, you know, Democratic voters and even independents being reluctant to vote for a Republican, just by the label.
Richard Cross, obviously the big criticism about Lieutenant Governor Brown in the primary was his handling of the rollout of the healthcare website. Right. Has he neutralized the questions about that? I mean, it obviously didn't gain much traction in terms of his Democrat primary. Obviously, this is something Mr. Hogan's going to talk about, one would expect, in the general election. Has Brown figured that one out?
Well, I think the issue kind of really started to be debated during the session back in January, early February. And I had a sense back then that come the primary, people would be kind of be done with it. And I think that's where things stand. People are done with it. It kind of joins the galaxy of criticisms against O'Malley. It doesn't have any special, I think, liability to him right now.
Frazier, well, final thought?
The polling showed that it didn't move voters one way or another. It was a non-factor mm-hmm. in terms of who people were for.
So again, what we know at this hour, Larry Hogan will face Anthony Brown in the gubernatorial contest in November. Brian Frosch will be the Democrat nominee for Attorney General. He will face an unopposed candidate in the Republican primary, Jeffrey Pritzker. And we will have complete election results, of course, on our website, WIPR.org. Well, Frazier Smith, Don Wargs, and Richard Cross, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Lots of folks helped us out tonight. Thanks to Don Warwick from Towson University and Richard Cross from the blog Cross Purposes. Maureen Harvey wrangled our returns. Tom Cartaxo and Julian Sadur worked the phones. Thanks also to Brandon Block and Alexandra Kennedy. Tom Welch helped us out in the control room. Andy Beanstock helped us out as an engineer. Brett Jaspers has been our producer and director. Thanks to everybody who called, and thanks to you for tuning in for our special primary election coverage. For Fraser Smith and the entire WYPR News team, I'm Tom Hall. Have a great night.